All right, back with you on this Sunday morning. We bring in the professor, Ron Wotus. Whoa, how are you this morning?
Good morning, Rabbi. I'm having a great morning. A great morning today. You know, I first dipped into Justin Veeley brings in these great pastries. I mean, high-end pastries, you know, the ones you think you're in France that you're eating, the pecan crawlers and these cinnamon buns. And I went in the middle of the clubhouse with the legend, Mike Murphy, had a cup of Joe with him. And we told stories and had a donut together, and we watched the clubhouse come alive, as you like to say, with the ballpark. So really nice. It's quiet, and the players start coming in, and as you always say about the park coming alive, the clubhouse is coming alive as well.
Boy, good description. Well, what's it like at the end of a season? You know, now of course, you got three more games down in San Diego, but this is the last home game. What's it like, the mood of the ball club? Now, you've been there at the end of a season, and you're heading into the playoffs, and you've been there when you haven't entered into the playoffs. So what's it like today? What do you expect today?
Well, you know, you're right. It's totally different if you're going to the playoffs when you're not. You know, I still think it's a little sentimental. You know, part of me anyways, as a coach, have been doing it so long, but for the players, I think, you know, they see the end is near. These guys are away from their families. And even a lot of these coaches, they haven't been home for, you know, 8 months. So, you know, it's a little bittersweet, you know, the season's ending, but you get to go home and take a breather. And I think that's the number one thing, as well as guys wanting to finish strong. But there's a lot of distractions, too. You're packing up. You know, you're having year-end exit interview, not interviews, you know, going over the plan for players in the winter, you know, in all different departments on the coaching staff. So there's a lot going on at this time as well, because you only know you have only have a few days left. And you got to get ready to travel. You got to get your flights, and you got to get out of here. So there's a few distractions as well.
Boy, a lot going on. So, all right, so what about for a coach? Do you do reports? So what do you do at the end of a season? How do you let everybody know what you think?
Well, you know, my situation is different than the coaches. And as a coach, you know, I mean, you know, we have these you know, these game plans for each player. It's not game plans, but their plan, their development plan. And, you know, the strength and conditioning department will go over stuff. The trainers will go over stuff with them, which they have to keep an eye on. You know, Kai's putting together, you know, year-end evaluations and things that the infielder should work on in the winter. He's asked everybody to be a part of that, and, you know, give their 2 cents. You know, the hitting guys do the same thing, the pitching guys. So it really is very thorough when the player leaves. Not like 15 years when, you know, the player left and that was just about, you said goodbye and, you know, you contacted them here and there. I mean, the training staff has always done it, but now on the coaching end, it's become a lot more involved.
Well, interesting. Good insight from the professor. 24/7 now with the coaching staff keeping in touch with the players. I can see that happening. Boy, yeah. You know, interesting this week. I was thinking about a couple of things. One, you got to see Mark Gardner this week. Bill had him on yesterday, and he's a former Willie Mack Award winner. And it just made me think of the coaching staff, how close you guys were. Let's talk about that coaching staff that you enjoyed for so many years and some of those coaches, especially Gardy.
Yeah, well, Gardy's the salt of the earth. You know, it's great to see him up here. Of course, he is a Willie Mack Award winner, so he lives down in Fresno, so it's easier for him to get here like some of these guys that have to fly cross country. But we had a great staff. We had a great blend. You know, we had a great blend. Gardy and Rags, I thought, were as a tandem. Were the best in the game. You know, they both brought a little different style to working with the pitchers. Of course, we had Flan at third, who brought a lot of energy and entertainment and did a tremendous job coaching third base. And I think one thing Boach did really well with that staff is, you know, we all knew our areas, and we all stayed in our lane and did the best we could in the area that we were responsible for. And at the end of the day, when you have that many pros doing it, you know, I think there was a lot of confidence from the players on what we were trying to accomplish, and just the interaction, because these guys have all, they've all been on the field and know what it's like to go through the ups and the downs of the season. Of course, we had Bam Bam as a hitting coach. We had Joe LaFay. The list goes on. Roberto Kelly was one of the best base running guys that I seen when he was coaching first base. Was tremendous in reading the pitchers and helping the runners steal bases. So it was a good group, and it was a fun group. You know, we had a lot of laughs, a lot of good times, as well as all those guys really got after it when it was time to compete on the field.
Yeah, good group, and you guys had a lot of success. I was thinking of Gardy yesterday when Bill was talking to him. And, you know, remember the Philadelphia series when Sanchez melted down and the whole fight started and all that. And Affelt was in the bullpen warming up. Mark Gardner kept him there to warm up. It was a key part of the game.
Yeah, I think those are things that, you know, guys that have been through it for so long, they understand those moments. And those moments become big, you know, making sure a player's, you know, mentally ready and physically ready when he might not expect to go in the game. You know, coaches can read between the lines. And we had another good one I neglected to mention was Billy Hayes. Billy Hayes has been in the game forever and managed in the minor leagues, has done everything, bullpen coach, first base coach. But that experience really paid off for us. And, of course, we had a lot of veteran players, and we had some really talented young players, and led by, of course, the Hall of Famer to be Bruce Bochy. So it was a fun time, Marty. And as you know, when you win, it's hard to have any negative thoughts about each other. Even though we got in our spats and we had our moments, when you win together, there's nothing like it in the world.
Oh, very good. I'm glad that you could see everybody and participate. It's a good part of the end of the season, which is kind of where we are now. What do you think of the Willie Mack Award winner, Wilmer Flores? Give us a little background on him and why he won the award from your perspective.
Yeah, well, I thought there was, it boiled down to a couple of guys. Everybody I spoke to, most of them voted for Flores, and Estrada was in there as well. And I think he very well could have won it as well. He says he's quiet. He's a young guy. He's quiet. And, you know, Flo has that, you know, veteran presence where he does talk a little bit and has some really, really good things to say when he talks. You know, it's a little bit like John Wayne. He doesn't say a lot, but when he says something, you listen. Or is that E.F. Hutton? Well, it could be both of them, I guess.
Probably E.F. Hutton. Yeah, both.
E.F. Hutton. Yeah. Okay. So he has that presence. He's always been a leader for the Latins. I know Estrada really looks up to him, and they all do, because what he's accomplished and the experience that he has in the game. And, you know, that's a very important part of a ball club, having a leader for the Latins like that. And, you know, we had Andres Galiaga in the past, people like that. But, you know, and I think that's why Flo, you know, was a great candidate. And, of course, he's, you know, he has the most home runs he's had in his career, RBI 70. He's moved all around the field. He's stayed healthy. You know, this is the most games he's played in his career, I believe, because he's been more of a part-time player in the past few years. So there's a ton of reasons that he was the winner. And it was so nice to see the organization fly his family out and surprise him. He didn't know that they were going to be here. And he looked over, and there's his family watching him get the award.
Yeah, he made a nice speech too, didn't he?
Yes, he did, and that's not easy to do. You know, you have the echo from the microphone. You have thousands of people in there, and, you know, as a player, you're not used to speaking in front of people like that. So, you know, he thanked everybody, and, you know, it just tells you about the character of the person. He thanked everybody else that, you know, he didn't want to leave out anybody. He just did a really nice job with the speech.
Nice. Wow, that's good. I'm glad that he got the award. All right, the professor is with us. This is it for us for the season. How about that? Another year we did the shows together. What about that?
I know, Marty. It goes quick, doesn't it? I mean, the seasons, we talk about the grind and how long it is, and here you go. You wake up one morning, and it's the last one. So I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Hopefully maybe we can do something in the winter here and there just to check in and let your fans know what you're doing and what's going on in the game, because you do have a ton of followers and I know they'd love to hear from you.
What's your winter like? What are you going to do?
Well, I always have to go back east to see family, and it's probably more about family and friends and just regular life. You know, I think this weekend I'm going to go up and watch my nephew Landon play up in a fall baseball that he's playing and get to watch one of his games. You know, a lot of stuff like that, visiting family, hanging with friends and having some dinner and drinking some wine and, you know, just regular stuff. I might even make my way out here this fall to River Islands and, you know, see everybody out there, you know, with the fall coming. And, of course, they have that fall, festival out there where you can get, you know, the pumpkins and the gourds and all that stuff and go through the mazes. It's a fun place to be.
Boy, you know, Landon must be like 30 already, isn't he? Well, we've been talking about him for like 15 years, right? How old is he?
Yeah, no, he's a freshman in high school now.
Wow.
So, they're growing up fast.
Wow. Boy, we've been talking about your nephew for years, and I'm glad that you could be part of his baseball education. You know, Aaron Judge, of course, hit 61 earlier in the week and brought memories of Roger Maris back to me, and I know you don't remember a lot about Maris, but Maris at that time, people didn't like him. No one wanted him to break Babe Ruth's record. He was not worthy, and they wanted Mickey Mantle, and it was really a crazy time. So here's Aaron Judge. Everybody loves the guy. He's sitting on 61 now. They're waiting for 62, and no one will pitch to him. It made me think of you guys, because you were there for Bonds. And didn't Bonds walk like 240 times or something? What did you guys think when no one would pitch to Bonds?
Well, we expected it. You know, it's just part of the game. You know, if these teams are trying to win, they're battling for a playoff spot, they're not going to pitch to them. You know, Barry, like you said, you know, the managers would just put up four fingers. And, you know, our lineup wasn't as deep as the Yankees, right? So it's a little harder to just intentionally walk Judge, because who you got coming up next? You got Stanton, all these other guys that can pop one out of the park. So, you know, that enters into it a little bit. But you're right. It's great to see New York embrace him. But going through this whole thing, the thing that stands out to me, I know there's a lot of rumors about, you know, he's a free agent and where is he going to go, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know how in the world he's going to be able to leave New York after doing what he's doing. But that remains to be seen. You know, I don't think the Yankees are going to let this guy go.
Yeah, I said that this week. His numbers are going to get retired. Maris was number 9. He's 99. He's going to get a monument, and he is in Yankee lore forever. So we'll see what the kid wants to do. You know, and I always say in these things, money talks. Money eventually talks. Isn't that the truth?
Yes, there's no doubt about it. You're right. And anything is possible. And then another thing you said, I remember when Terry Steinbach up with the Twins, you know, he wanted to stay in Minnesota and took a real, real hometown, friendly contract to stay there. So you don't know what the motivation of the player is, where he wants to be, what he wants to do. So anything is possible.
Yep, he's a Northern California kid, so let's hope so. I hope the Giants are serious about it. Well, we've got an interesting week coming up here. First of all, a lot of races are not decided yet, at least for this wild card thing. The Brewers blew one last night. Devin Williams walked a bunch, and the Marlins ended up beating him again. The Phillies are having trouble winning. The Padres are starting to win. So this three-game playoff is going to be fascinating, because if you don't have it wrapped up by today and you've got to pitch your big pitchers Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, they're not going to be ready for Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And it's going to be really – we've never had anything like this before.
Yeah, and, you know, to that point, you look to where when we were a wild card in 2014, how that worked in our favor so much was when we had Madison Bumgarner ready – The Pirates were trying to win the division, and I think threw pole on the last day of the season just to win the division. They were in the playoffs, but they didn't want to be the wild card. Right. And he had the meeting with his leadership council, right? And we ended up getting their third starter in Volquez. And then Crawford, who's walking in the park right now across the field. Well, it's perfect timing, Craw. You know, hits the grand slam, and with Bum just tore him up, and we never looked back. So, yeah, you're exactly right. It's, you know, and that's probably a good reason for having it be 2 out of 3. At least it's not one game. You know, your whole team's going to get more involved, and whether you make it or not, but there's going to be some different decisions to make. You know, do you bring one of your aces back on extremely short rest? You know, how do you put the roster together? Are you going to have more relievers? You know, a lot of guys like to use the bullpen today. So it is going to look a little bit different. I think that's very insightful of you to bring that up.
Yeah, this is going to be – we've never seen anything like this ever. We have not. And this is going to be tremendously strategic this week. If you haven't wrapped it up or if you – or look, you could be playing a 4-5 spot to be at home. You know, the Toronto-Seattle thing, you get the games – all the games are at home. So do you use your big pitchers during the week to make sure that happens, or are you just happy you're in? So to me, that's the biggest deal.
Yeah, no, and those are difficult decisions, just like Clint Hurdle had back in 14, like I was talking about. Those aren't easy decisions. So it'll be fun to watch. We'll see how it shakes down. You know, Marty, the other thing that really comes to mind to me is the Milwaukee Brewers. I know Josh Hader was traded, and he hasn't pitched very good for the Padres, and maybe they knew something was a miss there. But, you know, they were rolling right along with mm-hmm. Hader and the other guy. They send him to San Diego, and now they're really scuffling. And at the back end of the game, they you know, so that's going to be something that could bite them if they don't get in. And, I mean, that's going to be remembered for a long time.
Yeah, it could cost them. It could. And now they get Arizona for 3, and they're going to have to pitch Burns and Woodruff in those games. And Gallen is going to be in there, who we didn't see this weekend. And then the Phillies go to Houston, and who knows what's going to happen there as Dusty sets up his rotation. So this is going to be a crazy week. It's going to be a crazy week, and this is just the beginning of it. But let me ask you this. I was thinking about the fans, and I watched the Seattle clinch the other day, and they went nuts in Seattle. Well, nuts. And remember in 95 when Griffey slid in with the winning run and the place went crazy? I was thinking about asking you this question. Of all the fan bases, all the stadiums, which one is sort of the most impactful during a playoff for you? Now, you've been in against the Mets. You were there in 2000. Certainly seen the Dodgers. You've been in Atlanta. You've been in St. Louis. You've been in Philadelphia, Milwaukee, San Diego. Which one stands out to you? Say, boy, that's going to have a bearing on a game.
Well, I think the one that really just comes to mind, it's a little off of your question, but in the wild card game, Pittsburgh was louder than any park, and they were all in black, and they had their terrible towels going. It was really some kind of energy in that ballpark, and really the grand slam set the tone and shut everybody up. But, you know, I think New York can be difficult when you get that place, you know, full with those crazy fans you have there in New York, and they play the music loud. Philadelphia was not an easy place when we were playing there because of the team they had. But again, those are rabid fans that are really into the game. So those places stand out to me. And in L.A., just for the simple fact, when you get 60,000, that's one of the biggest parks in baseball. And they get their momentum going, and they play that music. That can be a difficult place as well. So those three stand out more than the other parks that you mentioned.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting. And Seattle for me and Toronto, it looks like those two are going to play off, and who knows where. But Toronto, how about Toronto? You haven't been in Toronto for a while, but Toronto goes crazy in the playoffs.
Yeah, they do. You know, I haven't been there for that type of atmosphere. When we go there, I've been there about 4 times, but when we go there, you know, the place is half full. but you know, they do have some real energy, and it's loud. They're right on top of you there. And there's rabid fans. You know, they come out, they have the hockey attitude up there in Toronto when they come to the baseball game, and they're very, very vocal. You're right.
Yeah, what is the hockey attitude now? You've been around hockey all your life.
Well, I think they want to see a fight, you know, so they're yelling and screaming. They want to see a fight on the field.
Were you a hockey fan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, I grew up watching hockey in the Northeast, and we played a little bit out on the ponds. And, yeah, we had a lot of fun skating and pickup hockey games. I played organized 1 year. But,
really?
You know, it didn't go. Yeah, it's hard to get ice time, though. You know, you had to drive a half hour to go to a bigger city to get to a rink where you can get the ice time. And it was just too much, you know, so I stuck with the other sports.
So you actually can get on ice skates and not fall down. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly. I can do that to this day, I believe. It's been probably, I think the last time I skated, we were in New York. What's that little rink they have there?
Laurie, yeah, Rockefeller Center.
Yes, there you go. Rockefeller Center. That's where we were at. And there was about 1,000 people on the ice, so you had to be real careful there. You don't run into anybody.
Now, is Laurie doing this with you?
She's not as big a skater as I was, you know. And I had to hold her hand a little bit and be real careful. Actually, Marty, it was quite dangerous for Laurie to be on that ice with all those people skating around.
All right, all right. A new aspect of the professor here, ice skating. I like it. Okay. All right. We have the Senior Olympics coming up, so maybe we'll
get... Yeah. There you go. Now you're really making me laugh.
All right. A couple of baseball things that came up for me. One yesterday, I got to see a double steal. Kyle Schwarber, stole home. And it was runner Harper's on first. He wants to make something happen. He goes halfway and stops. They throw through. Schwarber takes off. The throw to the plate is high. And Kyle Schwarber steals home. How about that?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's probably all set up by the positioning of the third baseman. You know, when these left-handers are up and you don't expect a slower runner to steal third, you're going to put the third baseman off the line because you want to play where the guy's going to hit the ball. But if you have speed, you always have to be aware of the double steal. So you got to keep the third baseman closer to third. Because if you throw through, he doesn't get as good a jump. But when he's 20 feet off the bag, he can get halfway down the line. So that's a design play, and you got to tip your hat to the Phillies. They pulled it off, and Harper did the right thing. If he's going to be out, you're supposed to stop so you can steal the run. So we haven't seen Philly do that, but they pulled it off, and that's how they do it.
Yeah, it was nice to see Schwarber do that. The other thing is, look, you spent a lot of time in the press box this year watching games, and you got to see the official scoring and all that. We had a couple of plays yesterday where the outfielder, you know, missed the ball, but the ball went for doubles. And you have some thoughts about, you know, the team error or some of the way hits and errors are being called today. So share that with us.
Well, they are. There is a place for the team error, I believe, and I think a lot of people believe the same way. When you know, I just don't like to see the pitchers get burned because we don't know who we want to charge the error to. Let's take an example of a pop up down the right field line where the right fielder is coming in, the second baseman and first baseman are going out in that Bermuda Triangle, and they all stand to look at the ball. Nobody calls it, and it falls right between them. Now, the pitcher shouldn't be penalized for that. I think, you know, within reason, if that ball's up there high enough, they ought to make it a team error. And that happens on several of the calls. The other thing I've noticed now, and I've seen it over the years, you know, scorekeeping is not easy. But I think in general, I think the pitchers are the ones that are getting burned. I think our expectation of a routine play in the field has really digressed. I think we're not giving the fielders the respect that they deserve. And of course, they don't want errors, But when a guy goes four steps to his right and tries to backhand the ball and it goes off his glove and the runner's safe, it's a hit. I just think we're giving way too many hits on plays that the fielders should be able to execute. And who gets burned by that? The pitcher gets burned. So I think we got to reevaluate what a routine play is for the best players in the world, whether it's in the infield or the outfield. I think they're better than we're giving them credit for.
Okay. Well, no, well said. I know you got to see a lot of that this year. Oh, a couple of loose ends. I'm glad we could talk a little bit longer today, and Bill hasn't done his interview this morning. He's nice enough to give me a little more time to do this stuff. I appreciate it. I was thinking about Craw. And, of course, the Giants are talking about, free agents. And all the free agents are shortstops. Can you make Craw second baseman? He's such a good athlete. Could he play second base, Craw? Well,
to answer your question, directly, yeah, he could. If that's the way the organization went and, that's what we wanted to do, he absolutely could. He could play second. He could play third. He could play first. He could play left field. He could play all over because he's like the Kiki Hernandez or the Chris Taylor or those athletes that the Dodgers had where they started moving guys all the way around. He's a shortstop. He's one of the best athletes on the field. And, when he messes around in the infield and sometimes goes on the second base side, right, when there's a shift to turn a double play, he looks like he's been playing second base his whole career. I mean, his glove-to-hand transfer is as good as anybody's from short. When he goes over to second, he can do it as well. So, that would be an easy adjustment for a guy like Crawford.
Okay, boy, that's good insight. I had not thought of him going all around the diamond. I said, maybe he could play second. Very good. That's a good insight for us. All right, one last, I'll throw this one at you. MVP, boy, they're arguing quite a bit. Well, forget about the National League. There's a million candidates. But in the American League, this big controversy, Ohtani, pitcher, hitter, or Judge, who carries the Yankees? Where do you go?
That is the million-dollar question, Marty. If this is the last question of the year, real good one. Real good one.
I'm going to leave you with that one. Go ahead.
Okay, should I answer that next spring when we get together?
Nope, I'm not letting you off the hook, counsel. The witness is on the witness stand.
Okay, sir, I will answer the question. I'm going to go with Judge because I think winning is so important in this game, and it's going to be a tough decision either way. And, it's going to be really interesting to see because I think Judge could get edged out too because the guy does pitch and he hits. But at the end of the day, he's tied Maris, probably going to break Maris. The Yankees are in. It's New York. And he's going to win the MVP, and I'd vote for him as well.
I love it. All right, great answer. Well, you're a winner. I know you had a good year and the new job, and I know you helped a lot of people, but you are a winner. So thanks again for another great season of doing this. And you're the professor, and I'm the rabbi, and I guess that's what we do.
That's what we do, Marty, and I greatly appreciate you having me on again. It's been an honor and a pleasure to be with you, and hopefully we can continue it down the road. So thank you, Marty.
We will. All right, have a good day, Will. All right, we'll catch up. All right, that's the beginning of the show here. More coming up. We'll take a break. I'll be back right after these messages.